Salam everyone. I'm going to read from a stat song from the 1989 Feast of Tabernacles, and it's a very nice one. It's got a lot of good questions. And I'm going to start a little ways down where the questions begin. Question. When I love someone, I love God in him. But if I dislike someone, it is not because I dislike God. What is it? Maitreya. I don't think anyone in higher consciousness dislikes anyone. We dislike what is in them, their actions, their attitude, but the essence, which is God, we never dislike. We always like everyone. If their attitude or the things they do are good, we do not dislike them. Of course, if we are human and we are not in higher consciousness, we have our own standards. We have been influenced by the family, by the culture, by the schooling, and our experiences from our previous lifetimes. So we create some measurements or standards to measure other people as, do they measure to our standards or not? If we look at a person that this standard doesn't exactly fit, then what we're encountering is unknown to us, something that doesn't measure to our standards. The human is very afraid of the unknown. The human feels very uncomfortable in an unfamiliar environment. That's why we will be taken aback, and we take it as something that we don't want to deal with. We probably create a dislike for the other person instantly without any reason. This explanation is true in a situation that we just dislike a person with no apparent reason. But if we have a close encounter with the person, and then after a while we decide we dislike such a person because he or she does these things that we don't like, then we really do not dislike the person. We dislike the attitude, the actions, the things they do. As you come to higher consciousness, you become much more flexible. You become more etheric yourself. The more etheric you are, ether is very easily converted to different elements in the universe. You also become very flexible. You can deal with different energies and different attitudes, and at the same time not be affected and not create hate or dislike for the other person. Indeed, you create compassion for others. You create a kind of corrective love, that you don't hate the other person, but you say to yourself, how can I help, how can I correct, if there is something wrong in that person's attitude? So in the higher level, you never dislike anyone. The only thing is you look at them with the perfection, or the potential that the person has. You look at the person and say, hey, that person has a potential. He's a good musician. He's a good singer. He's a good talker. He's a good cook. He's a good floor sweeper. He's a good lawyer. He's a good doctor. He's a good, whatever they do, good. It is their potential, you see. You can become a good maid just like this maid here. Everyone loves her. She is just a maid, but she does what she does well. She does it with love. She puts that love in her work and everyone says, that's beautiful. Everyone loves her because she accepted her dharma. She says, yes, I do this well, that's where I am, and that's what I do best. She does it very well, she's happy, and everyone else is happy too. Actually, that is what part of the communities of light are. Each person finds his place in the community. No one has to be like anyone else. If you have a big heart and you give beautiful talks about the heart of God, but you intellectually don't understand what the teaching is, you are still beautiful. You give experience to other people instead of intellectually stimulating them. Or, as I said, you can just clean the floors and everyone says, wonderful, look at what beautiful floors we have in this community, or whatever the person's dharma is. You look at the person, you see the potential, and you love that potential. But of course, the person herself or himself doesn't know that potential. They want to be something else. For instance, if they have a big heart, they want to be an intellectual. If they are very intellectual, they want to become heart, or something different than what their own potential is. What you do is, of course, lovingly, gently, and compassionately, try to let the other person realize his own potential. So that hate really shouldn't come to us at all. If there is hate and resentment, we have to meditate on ourselves. Where does hate really come from? It comes from us, doesn't it? It is in us. We really can't hate anyone. See, hate is a tendency whose source is within us. Resentment, hate, discrimination, anything that is from the lower nature comes from us. As we meditate, we can also meditate on this thing in us. Why do I hate such a thing or such a person? Until our meditation eventually opens us to realize the problem in ourselves. Of course, sometimes that feeling comes from previous lifetimes. you have had some bad experience with this person. Sometime, suddenly, in this lifetime, you encounter the same person with the same energy, and you have no idea why you really feel such resentment. Again, through your meditation, you can encounter your resentment and hate, and realize that it's just you. You can't hate anyone. How can you hate anyone in the universe if God is everything? How can you hate anything in the universe? If you hate any part of the universe and love the rest, what are you doing? You're separating one part from the rest. Can you do that? No. God is everything. You cannot hate. If you hate, then you have not realized the real meaning of Hari Om Shri Hung, Om Nam Kevalam. Om Nam Kevalam means God is everything, that divinity is in everything. When you look at the other person, if you have some hate, you then have to look at yourself, because it is really your problem if you hate someone. Again, we return to meditation and realizing how things affect us and why. We reach a point where we no longer hate, we become compassionate. My answers are sometimes so different than answers that people usually expect to receive. You might like to follow up your questions with another question. So if you have a follow-up question, do not hesitate to ask. Next question is, how can we learn to love our friends, or husband, or children, or parents without attachment? Maitreya, look at the people around us who God provided to be with us. Appreciate God for providing us such an opportunity to be with these people, to love them, be loved by them, and create an environment where everyone grows physically, mentally, and spiritually. In that sense, then we look at the hierarchy of beings in our life. The teaching is that there are four beings who are the most important in our life. The first is God, who created us and gave us the joy and love of being here in the body to realize Him, or her, or both, or it, or whatever. We're realizing Him, we're really realizing ourselves. Know thyself to know God. He is the first being in our lives. He is the most important thing. Nothing else, no one else is more important than God to realize and know who He is. Then if our priorities are right, we can have relationships with other beings on earth. The second most important being in our lives is the person who takes us to God. The most important is God, but how can we know Him? How can we know God? So the second most important person in our lives, in the hierarchy of beings, is our spiritual teacher, the person who shows God to us, who takes us to God. He becomes a bridge between us and Him. He becomes the second most important person in our lives. The third most important are our parents. Their bodies have been used so that we could come to this world and live here. From the very beginning, our mother sacrifices her body to bring forth the child. We see the changes in her body. The hormones start changing, and by the time the child is born, she really has gone through dramatic changes to bring the child to this world. So the mother is really a sacrificial being when she brings a child into this world. A very, very high place in our lives should be kept and given to the mother. Of course, the father also loves us, keeps us warm, provides for our needs, and makes us physically and mentally strong. When we need security, daddy is there so we feel comfortable. We're loved by daddy, etc. We have a great responsibility to them. The fourth most important being is our spouse, our husband or wife. God provided the spouse for us to be a companion, to be a lover, to be a friend, to be together, to be close, to share our responsibilities and deepest feelings with one another. That is very important in our lives. However, there is a hierarchy between these four. First is God, second the spiritual teacher, third our parents, and then our spouse. None of them in the lower level should become an obstacle for us to go to the higher one. For instance, if the spiritual teacher is not taking us to God, then he's not doing his work, is he? We should disregard such a teacher. We have to go to a teacher who takes us to God. If our parents prevent us to go to our teacher, or our spouse makes us disrespect our parents, they are an obstacle in our path, etc. If our parents are obstacles between us and God, or our spiritual teacher, they should not be disrespected. We never disrespect our parents, ever. It doesn't matter how bad they are. We always have to keep in our mind, that our parents were sent by God, and they really went through a great sacrifice to bring us to this life. It is important to love and respect them, and always help them if we can. But loving, respecting, and helping does not mean to follow them if they are not taking us to God, if they are not taking us to our spiritual teacher. If our parents are not to God or to a spiritual teacher, we still respect them, love them, and help them, but we go to God. Now, if we have parents who take us to God themselves, what happens? They take two places. They also become the spiritual teacher. So they become the second highest beings in our lives because they are taking us to God. They become a bridge between us and God. If our parents take us to a spiritual teacher who can take us to God, again, they are doing a great service for us. They are beautiful parents. That's why I would like to see more parents, more families in the mission. That's why I love the Blooms. I guess that was a group of people there, a family. The whole family is here. That's wonderful. It's so nice. It's so beautiful. I'd like to see all the wives and husbands, married couples and children here. That is how the communities of light are created, with the married couples, with the families. If the parents become a bridge between us and God, or a spiritual teacher, they are the most respected, the most wonderful beings in our lives. Then, of course, there is your spouse. If your spouse does not become an obstacle between you and God, your spiritual teacher, and parents, and he or she doesn't make you disrespect them, then again your spouse is a beautiful wife or husband. But if he becomes an obstacle between you and them, then he is not doing his dharma. He is trying to take you from your responsibility toward the hierarchy of the beings in your life. If we keep our focus on these four beings in our lives, the most important beings in our lives, then our perspective is very straight, and we can handle any situation very well. Because if God is the first and highest being in our focus, then the spiritual teacher, then the parents and the spouse, the rest of humanity will be struggling travelers with us. They are the people who, if we can help them to go a little higher in their consciousness, that's what we do. If they can help us, they will help us to reach higher consciousness. But they are really not a part of the hierarchy. It is nice to have friends, but the goal of life is not to have friends. It doesn't mean not to have friends. It's fine if there is a connection between people who can share God together and grow together. They can be together in that level. That's great. That's beautiful. You can have that kind of friendship in God. However, as you grow, you will have other friends in higher consciousness. Sometimes you have to leave your old friends and find new ones in this new level of consciousness you are entering. I'm sure when you were 5 or 6 years old, you had some friends. Where are they now? Probably most of you don't know where they are. In that moment, it was necessary for you to have that connection with those people, to grow up with them, learn from them, and they learn from you. Then they went to other schools and you lost track of them. You don't know where they are any longer. We went to elementary school. We had some friends there. We grew up together. Where are they now? We don't know where they are. Then in high school and college we had friends. We don't even know where these friends are. Probably most of us don't know where our college friends are. What is a friend then? We consider someone a friend in the moment because in the moment it is necessary for us to be connected. Then most of our friends go away because the only permanent thing in this manifested universe is change. If you become attached to anything in this universe, it is going to be gone tomorrow and you're going to suffer. But if you realize that these things are temporary, you can love them and be with them in that moment. You can enjoy them, but do not let your attachment become strong, because as I said, it is going to change. As the change comes, though, we hang on to our friends and become upset by the things that change. We were so nice, our friends were together. We had such a good time for a couple of years together. Now one of them is in another state, another one is in another state, and we are no longer together. So friends and even our children are not ours. As you see, I didn't mention children as a part of the hierarchy of the beings, because for the children, the parents are the hierarchy, but for the parents, the children are not. The parents are really just a tool used by God. Most of us have children without planning to have children. We just have children. When they come, we are used by God to bring these beings to this world. Our responsibility is physically, mentally, and spiritually to help these beings to grow up as perfect as possible. But children eventually reach a point where we're comfortable that they are mature enough to fly away. Just like the birds. See, the birds don't hang on to their young. When the time comes, the young can fly away. The parents go one way, and the young go the other way. Even if they fly together, they no longer are connected on that level. Our parents are also really not ours. But there is a lot of tendency in parents to hold on to the children. Not mothering them, but sometimes smothering them. If we keep our focus on God, however, we won't be attached to anything. We think not being attached means we don't love other people. It seems like a lot of people make this mistake of attachment and love as the same thing. For instance, we have a family member who says, "Are you going to miss me?" whenever she wants to leave. We tell her, "No, we won't miss you, but we love you." So attachment really is not love. Attachment is really your need. It is our need that we are attached to the other person. It's not real love. See, if I love someone and let him go, and he comes back to me, he or she is mine and we are one. But if I try to keep that person with me, really I don't love her or love him. I want to keep him here with me because I need the person. If you free a bird and it goes and comes back to you, what happens? It is yours. It loves you. If you cage a bird, however, that bird doesn't really love you. It doesn't want to be with you. It wants to be free. It wants to go away. It wants to fly. If you let it go and the bird comes back to you, then it really wants you. It wants to be with you. That is real love. That is the real relationship between two people. That's also what we have to be. We have to love our friends, our parents, and our children that way, with that love, so that they want to be with us. We have to be so beautiful, have such godly love, that our children just want to be with us because we are so beautiful. It is just as we were talking to someone here who wants to be with her daddy, because daddy is such a nice person. Oh, I opened a secret. But that was so beautiful, the way she said it to me. I didn't want it to just to stay with me. It was beautiful. It's a wonderful feeling because the love is there. We want to be with those people whom we truly love. So there's no attachment, but true love. And then there's a comment from the audience. But the worst is when you want someone and you let him go and he doesn't come back. Maitreya, yes, I can understand your point. It's a very good point. However, remember, a person who goes and does not come back never was yours. Through your meditation, eventually you reach a point where you let the people go and they come back. You reach a point where they want to be with you. They want to love you because, what did we say? What is the most scarce commodity on earth? It is real love. If you create real love, what happens? Everyone wants it, and it's wonderful. That's also what the communities of light are. The more we create real love in the communities of light, the more we will reach a point where we have so much love that we want to give it to everyone. You give to this person and he says, "Where did you get this? I want to be there." And then you say, "Come this way to the communities of light." Love is the rarest commodity. That is what we have to create here within ourselves and the communities. The more we create that kind of love, the greater power we have. This is not as a person who uses power in a bad sense of controlling anything or trying to rule people with that kind of controlling power. We're talking about the power of God, the power of love, with a capital L, the power with which people want to be controlled. The power with which people want to be controlled. It is not in a bad sense, but because that love is so corrective, so beautiful, and it feels so good. That's why I want to do things, so I can receive that love. What can I do that I can receive that love more and more? Then you are willing yourself to do them. There's no longer, "Thou shall not," but "If you shall not," you will receive this love, you will receive this strength, and you will receive this freedom. In the Old Testament, it is written, "Thou shall not do this, thou shall not do that." Those are the Ten Commandments. Then Christ came and said, "Even if you look with lust, take your eyes and throw them away." Why? He wanted to purify us. Now in this age, it is not that you don't do it because God said, "Thou shall not." You don't lust, not because you don't want to pluck your eyes out and throw them away, but because you know if you don't do it, you will receive that strength, the love, and the purity that strengthens the spirit in you. there's much more that's much more compassionate, isn't it? It's no longer "thou shall not," or "pluck your eyes out," or "cut your hand off," but because you know if you follow God's laws, they will give you strength and the Spirit of God. That's why you do it. It is the new era. It is the time of the golden era. It is the time when the laws and God have to be understood, not feared. The more we understand God, the more we realize that what he tells us to do is not because he is a very revengeful God, but because he knows that it is good for us and will bring that beauty to us. Next question. As far as the chakras are concerned, you said we should take a cooler bath and cool the chakras. What do you think about steam baths, saunas, and hot tubs? Maitreya. The cooler the body, the more efficient is the body. If you are in a hot room, what happens? Usually you become sleepy because your body becomes large. That's why it's recommended to take a half bath. The half bath is for cooling the body, cooling down the chakras. With the half bath, not only do we cool our bodies, but we prevent many kinds of diseases in the body, especially colds. We rarely catch a cold if we keep our bodies cool, because the body is used to being, or the body is used to being cool. And this keeps the body much stronger. Hot tubs, saunas, and steam baths make the body overwork. They make the body perspire. They force a lot of toxins out. So in that sense, it helps the body to get rid of some toxins that it usually has a hard time to get rid of. But if you take it very often, your body becomes lazy. That's why the people who frequently take this kind of treatment or this kind of bath, after a while their bodies start craving it. They don't know why they keep wanting to go to these places more often. The more they do it, they want to do it more often because the body is becoming lazy. The body is saying, he's going to go in the sauna, why should I bother? So do not overdo it. Also in these environments, disease is rampant. Steam baths and places like that can be very dangerous because it is a perfect environment for germs to grow. It's not recommended if it's a public place. If you can have those kind of places in your private home and use them very discriminatively, it is okay. Probably the best way is just for your family to use that facility and not very many other people, unless you really are comfortable with the other people or the other person to use it. It should be kind of a family place to use. Don't overdo using it because it's going to make you lazy. It can be helpful in a moderate way with discrimination and discretion. In general, they are more trouble than the benefit they render. Next question. What about the effect of the sun on our chakras? Maitreya. As I said, the cooler the body, the more efficient. Use the sun moderately. Everything should be used with the middle path in mind. Moderation is the real answer to these questions. You have to use everything in moderation. Even meditation should be done in moderation. If you meditate too much, then you become an escapist. You lose the world. You become completely detached from everything around you. So too much meditation may not be good. Too much worldliness is not good. Too much eating is not good. Too much not eating is not good. See, too much of anything is not good. Too much of a good thing will become boring too. Just imagine you can have the best vegetarian food. I was going to say you can have steak every day, but this is not the place to say it. Just imagine the best food in the universe. Imagine eating ice cream for breakfast, ice cream for lunch, ice cream for dinner, ice cream for a snack. What happens? After a while, you don't even want to look at ice cream. So it is really a matter of moderation and discrimination of mind and realizing how these things affect the body. I used to live in Pennsylvania, where the sun is not as bright and warm as in the South. Then I transferred to Mississippi State University. I was going there for part of my education. I remember I was driving, and when I passed the Tennessee border, there was a welcoming station that you could just park there. I remember my body needed sun so much that I lay down in the front of my car and I just fell asleep for hours. When I woke up, I was really revived. My body was craving the rays of the sun. In that sense, my body needed that and liked it, and my body enjoyed it. It was very helpful. But if you go to sleep in the Florida sun for 12 hours every day for 6 months, it is too much. You will be completely burned up. Again, there has to be moderation in everything that you do. The sun is good for the body, but not if it's overdone. For instance, you don't need to sit in the sun in New Mexico because the sun is so powerful and it's so bright. Even the skin cancer rate is very high here. So you try not to stay in the sun as much as possible. But if you are in Pennsylvania or Boston, you want to get some sun in the summer because the sun is not so bright and powerful. Again, it comes back to the discriminative mind, moderation, and where you live. For example, we said that meat has a lot of tama in it. But if you live in Siberia, probably you cannot live without meat. There are no vegetables. There is all meat, and you need meat to create that heat to make your body warm and get it going. So again, it depends on time, place, and people. Question. Also in relation to the chakras, is it the same as you just said, or is there another point of view there? Maitreya, how the sun affects the chakras? Sun is necessary for life. It's the life-giving energy on Earth. If your body needs the heat and rays of the sun, and if you use the sun to recharge your chakras, your life force and energy, that's fine. That's going to be helpful to you. But for instance, there's an exercise for pranayama, a breathing exercise in yoga. They do not recommend doing it in the sun. You have to sit in the shade to do it, because it creates a lot of heat by itself. If you do it in the sun, it might affect your brain and even damage your chakras. That's why you don't do that exercise in the sun. Again, it comes back to if your body needs the sun and you realize, yes, my body needs the sun, then probably you don't even have to take your clothes off to receive the life force of energy of the sun. You can just sit in the sun with your clothes on, and still the life force will penetrate your body. You can sit and have some sun, and even fall asleep in the sun for a while. If you need it, you will feel revived, and you will feel very good when you wake up. If you don't need it, you will have a headache. Then you will know you overdid it. Does that answer your question? And I guess it did, because it doesn't look like there's another follow-up. And I'm going to go ahead and stop the reading there. Salam.